Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Under the Rock Studios in Los Angeles, California, this is The Strange Chameleon Show, a podcast with style, soul, and sarcasm, along with laughter, love, and listen! Follow them now on iTunes. I promise, you won't, I mean you will be entertained.
Turn down a little bit too?
Turn down?
Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Welcome to the Strange Chameleon Show.
Welcome. Nah, we don't need that. It's not going to fit on my big head.
Man, it's not cool when you're trying to do a show and the cops shut down the 210 or something like that.
I hate when they do that. Have you experienced that? Mr. Ryan Vaughn in the house. Thank you for joining us on the Strange
Chameleon Show. Right, passage in LA, right?
It's crazy.
It's an inconvenience.
Yeah.
I hate
just
it.
Just for no reason. We're just going to shut it here.
No,
on the
worst
Sunday.
Part is when they don't even do anything and then they just take off.
You ever been behind one of the cops and they start just slowly swerving
wider
and you're just like, what is going on? Yes. And they just take off.
Yes. Yes. What is that about? Do you think like maybe they get an emergency call and then they're
never mind? So I grew up in Arizona and they used to do that there too. They would do it just to slow down traffic. They try to break up, like especially at high traffic times and people are going way too fast. They'll do it just to slow traffic down.
Really?
But I've seen it here because of accidents. Like if there's like an accident up ahead, they'll do it to slow traffic down before the accident. Because people are crazy in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's true.
So Facebook Live, everyone, and we can't get you a little bit because it's just off the camera. Yeah, if you don't mind squeezing in a little bit. Facebook Live, get the footage, get the Facebook experience. Yeah, Facebook experience. Yeah, perfect. I know. I really hate that. That's the part where you can just get it out, where you can just get off the exit. And then that's when actually there's times where like they'll be able to like they're in front and they start doing it. A lot of people just get off an exit. And
I've done that.
Because if you try to go ahead, then they'll pull you over or something. But
oh, yeah, you can get a ticket.
So we have a great show. So many questions, so little time. But we'll try to squeeze in as much as we can because we want to know so much about you. I mean, you know, as long as, you know, so how we met.
It's a pretty fun story.
Fun story.
coincidental.
Yeah. We were at Jamie Foxx's house and we were just hanging out. And and I met you along with some other great people. And you mentioned that you played the cajon and
drums. Kind of how the conversation got started.
Yeah.
You recognized what it was because a lot of people don't know what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That's very normal, I think, when you play cajon is that people don't know what you have. It caught my eye because Patrick brought his own cajon. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, if you have that opportunity, you're going to bring a cajon. I mean, that's just me thinking.
Yeah.
But I think it was pretty cool because in the end, I got to jam with them. I don't know if you stuck around the whole time.
No.
You took off early? Yeah.
Your wife was sick.
No. Yes, my wife was sick at home. Yes, yes. Yeah. My wife, I was like, that wasn't my wife. I was with my friend. And my wife, we essentially ended up, it's crazy because I actually wouldn't have been at that party if my wife hadn't gotten sick because we canceled our entire holiday trip because she couldn't travel.
Oh,
she got like the flu and some other like bronchial infection simultaneously. So she was like, we were like Christmas Eve in the not the ER, but like an emergency clinic getting her looked at. It's like, there's no way she's going to make the trek to Arizona the next day. It's like a 6-hour drive to Northern Arizona. So we canceled our whole trip. And we're just like, we'll hang out, we'll get healthy, catch up on emails, watch movies. And then my friend Chandler Juliet, who's a wonderful singer-songwriter, hit me up and she's like, hey, all of my friends are out of town. Do you want to go to this like pre-Grammy party at Jamie Foxx's house? Lo and behold, we run into each other and hang out. And then, I had to be a responsible husband and get back.
Yeah,
yeah, of course, of course.
Good, but it's always it's the FOMO, right? Like the fear of missing out. Like always, and I'd never want to leave.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got. She had to pull me out, literally.
I did. I was like, all right, we gotta get going.
We gotta get going. I got work the next morning, and I'm like, I'm going to probably call in. I don't know. I'll see what I can do. But yeah, we had a great time. I got to play, and he had some beat in his mind. He was trying to do like some beatbox with his mouth.
He actually jammed on his
computer. And I was like, I don't know what you're trying to say. You know, just show me, man. Just show me. And he's like, all right. And he got on it, and it was
a literal
cool
beatbox.
Man. Yeah, a little beatbox. And it was pretty cool. A memory that will never fade. Always have it there.
The photos on Facebook.
Yeah.
So it's definitely forever.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll never wash that cajon ever again.
Nope. But yes, so let's just, we'll get to know you a little bit more. Sure. So I wanted to kind of, I'll start, you know, a little history, and then we'll work up to what currently that you're working on.
Cool.
So how were you introduced to drums and percussions?
I think it was actually, I grew up part Arizona, part California, you know, okay, divorced family. So when I was 10, my mom and I moved to Northern Arizona. So I started elementary school here. And in California, like the band program started in like fourth grade.
Okay.
So I was looking a way to get out of class. And I was like, cool. Like I can go play a band and I could get like to miss an hour of class. This is great. And school was easy for me. So I was bored. I was like, I needed something.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and my cousin was a drummer in Upland High School. He was, like, in the marching band, and so I was like, oh, that's cool. And our grandfather was, like, always tapping and, like, had an affinity for the drums. There are no musicians in my family, really. So
oh, really?
I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I'm a big fan of the Malcolm Gladwell books, and I bring it up because when I was 10, we moved to Northern Arizona, which is, I was in an elementary school that went from kindergarten to sixth grade. Arizona starts in middle school in sixth grade, so I moved. I never really graduated elementary school, but Arizona didn't start band until sixth grade, so I already had like a year or two head start. So I got to Arizona, and whereas in California, I felt a little behind because I wasn't taking private lessons at the time, and all these kids were taking private lessons, and I was like, I'm getting like the third and fourth string parts, you know, getting the triangle part and getting the tambourine part, but never getting like snare drum or bass drum, you know, in concert band. And just coincidentally, by moving to Arizona, I am now a year or two ahead of everybody musically. So I started getting the better parts. And like Malcolm Gladwell always talks about like the situational circumstance, like where I don't know that I would have pursued music had I not had that extra boost of confidence by having that slight edge over my peers and being just constantly reinforced and encouraged, like, oh, wow, you're actually pretty good, you know, only because I started a little ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my beginnings, and everyone was, like I said, was very encouraging, and then it went from, you know, concert percussion to encouraging me to play a drum set, and then trying to convince my parents to, like, help me buy a drum set,
and
drum lessons, and then eventually they caved, and I got a drum set, and I started in the jazz band in like seventh grade, and then eighth grade started taking lessons and didn't suck, which was good. And then went to high school, and then I can't remember. It was very competitive at my high school, like lots and lots of drummers. It was a small town, Prescott, Arizona. A lot of like well-known musicians had retired there, which was really interesting. Like Jack Wilkins, who founded the UNT guitar program. A drummer named Mel Zelnick, we all studied with, used to play. He's like old white Jewish guy from New York, like retired in Prescott with his wife, and used to play with Benny Goodman and like Bird and Dizzy Gillespie. And so it was cool. Like these were the naive kids in this mountain town in Arizona. And
wow.
Like, these cats who had actually been playing on the East Coast with some of these legends that we start studying in high school. And it was just like a really positive community. So I guess you started playing. We all started playing around town and booking gigs and dates and coffee shops and private shows in high school. So like 15, we're like running our own club date bands in this small little town. And
nice.
Which is very encouraging. Everyone was like, this is great. Go pursue this. Go do this. So
yeah.
There was never any like, you need to get a backup plan. Like you need to be realistic. The whole community was super supportive of the music program, which was
That's really cool. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know that Will Smith has a thing where he says, you know, if you got a plan B, you plan to fail.
I've heard that. I would discount that. I mean, I think that's BS.
Oh, yeah?
it's fun to say as a creative, but like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having other skill sets and leaning into them. And like, that will, I will explain that as we progress through the timeline. But okay. I'm a Virgo. I'm very like methodical and thoughtful. So like when I got out of high school, I was like senior year. I got like first chair all state jazz band. Like it was fascinating because you don't realize it in the moment that like, oh wow, maybe I am pretty good and I could go to school for this. Got headhunted out of high school to go to, funny enough, a community college in Arizona, which had the best jazz program. So I started studying there, and just again, they were just very, very encouraging and just kept encouraging us to like gig and learn about how to make a living as musicians. And I, always hedging my bets, elected to take a bunch of like business classes on top of the music classes. Mm-hmm. So I was juggling like 22 to 24 credits a semester just to be practicing all the music classes plus all the business classes, just because like I wanted to have alternate skill sets in the event that like something happens. And if you're aware of the music industry, especially as a drummer, technology is definitely always a mitigating factor, because you're just like, I can't remember the last time I played on a pop record, because everything is in the box. Like, they don't need a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
So like constantly trying to like evolve and be aware of like the surroundings, it's hard to be a musician, especially a side person in today's market. So back then, our professors were explaining this to us. Mm-hmm. Like my first day of class, the professor just started writing all these like verbs on the board. It was like, you know, arranging, orchestrating, and then other like phrases, like he was a trumpet player, so like lead trumpet in the Phoenix Symphony, composer, teacher, private teacher. He just kept going, and he had like 20 or 25 on the board, and he's like, that's what I do to make a living. I don't just play the trumpet. I do all of these things, and that culminates in my annual salary as a freelance entrepreneur. I was like, oh, yeah, no one just plays their instrument. It's very, very rare that someone just plays their instrument, doesn't have any other skill sets. So I always, when I talk to younger musicians, kind of, yes, I get it. Like, don't plan on using the plan B, but there's nothing wrong with studying something else while you're in school. Like, especially if that's something you're interested in, because you might...
Discover something.
Or you might, like, change your mind in 10 years. You might burn out.
Right, no,
or you
for
might
sure.
Choose a different path. You might find a way for them to cross, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, technology and music, like... I ended up much how old am I? 15 years later, crossing over into the business side, and realized in my 30s, I was significantly more passionate about the music business than I was about performing. Mm. But that also had to do with spending 10 years in New York and just playing 10 shows a week and just grinding and grinding and grinding for 10 years. And you have to in New York to survive.
Yeah, I hear it's tough just working. Even as a waiter in New York is hard.
Yes.
I mean,
oh man,
jeez!
Because you can't just do that. Like every waiter I knew, like had a second gig.
Wow.
Like, and they were all pursuing some sort of creative path as well. They were musicians, they were songwriters. Like most of the like awesome bartenders I knew were also incredible singer songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And that they would bartend like two or three nights a week, because you just make so much money in New York bartending if you're in the right location. So they can make $1,000 a night working two, three nights a week, and then be able to afford an apartment and be able to pay a band,
and
make records, be able to go on tour. So but they almost always had some other gig outside of the bartending gig just for extra money, because New York's so expensive.
Well, speaking of gigs, everything that you're saying is really resonating with me. I was trying to find the exact name for this bill that was introduced, and it just went into effect. AB5. AB5. That's right. Yeah. I was like,
it's
AB5.
Very, it's hot topic.
Yes, yeah. And
it is.
Have you noticed a change in your career due to this bill
has affected you?
Jinx.
I love that we're talking about this. So like,
okay,
quick preface, like I switched to music management a few years ago. So I work most of my days. I spent running my own company with a partner, like managing 10 different artists So like, okay, I'm way into this stuff. I love this stuff. Nice. The AB5 thing, I would say there's a lot of misinformation out there, so be careful.
Okay.
From everything I've read, it's written vague on purpose. It's written to be vague. They're going after Silicon Valley and like Uber and Lyft and all these apps and companies that are taking advantage of the freelancers.
They were
signing people up with these incentives where the drivers would get all these bonuses and they would make a living wage. And then after a year, the incentives would disappear and they'd be making like a third of minimum wage. But because they're not employees, the companies could get away with paying them an average of $5 an hour without the incentives, whereas the minimum wage is like $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. So the whole point of the bill was to go after these companies, but they purposely wrote it to cover a vast amount of, I don't want to say companies, but like different
freelancer?
Types of freelance work.
It's freelance work,
so
okay.
Like, but from what I understand, like the entertainment world asked and lobbied for a exemption and got it. But the musicians union did not lobby for an exemption. They wanted they wanted AB5. It actually, and from what I understand, and I might get completely hung by a bunch of AFM folk, but it really does help give the union more power and leverage. And unfortunately, I think it's over the creatives, not actually over what they're trying to do, which is make it easier to make musicians employees. Mm-hmm. But like, I was a member of the union since I was in high school because I was encouraged to, and I believed all my mentors like this is a good thing. And then by the time I got to New York, I was like, I don't really know what the union does for me. And they could list all these things like, yeah, cool. I don't use your rehearsal rooms. I don't use your network. I have my own network. You don't get me any gigs. And then I got a gig as the band leader on the Katie Couric show. It was like, hey, the Katie Couric show is going to add a band. Fun Fridays, and I got to help put together the band and rehearse the band. I was going to be the band leader. We did one episode, and she like turned in her resignation the following week, so they canned all new projects. So we only ever did one episode.
Aww.
But I went to the AFM, and I was like, hey, guys, like I got this gig. Like, all right, finally, 10 years of dues. Let's get to work. And they're like, we can't help you. And I was like, what do you mean you can't help me? And they're like, it's what network? ABC. Yeah. ABC is owned by Disney. Disney doesn't deal with the unions.
Wow.
Like, the only advice we can give you is you cannot take the gig. I was like, wait, you want me to not take the band leader gig on the Katie Couric show because you don't have any leverage over Disney? I was like, that's not going to happen. And so I ended up doing all the negotiations myself.
Wow.
And like, Disney doesn't pay any back end, but they still paid all of the union rate equivalency. So we still got paid what we would have made, but there was no back end. But it's a daytime talk show. There's no re-airs, really. There might be some, but
got it.
Very small.
It's all live at that moment, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, you're just like, no one's watching reruns of
a
show that's on 5 days a week. Really, you know, like a daytime talk show. So that kind of I became disenchanted with the union after that point.
Yeah.
And then I just never needed them. They never, like, unless you're on Broadway, unless you're on like some sort of massive gig that requires you to be union, like, I just don't know what they do for musicians. And they, you know, the money gets paid to them and you can pay your whatever fee that you need to get your check, but I don't know that they have any leverage over musicians. And none of us would work if everything had to be a union gig. Like, 95% of all the work I've ever done has been non-union. So the AB5 thing, I think it was kind of the union's chance to like try to be relevant again, but I think it's backfiring. They're talking about the woman from San Diego.
Lorena Gonzalez.
Yeah, state congresswoman. Like, it's like, this could like end her political career. Like,
yes.
She thought it was like going to jumpstart it.
I heard that she is getting harassed everywhere she goes.
People are upset. It's like, it didn't come out of nowhere. I will say musicians are really bad at being informed. And like, the bill was lobbied over for a year and then it passed. And then everyone's like, oh, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly, it's so new. I don't know anybody who's been directly affected.
Okay.
Funny enough, you mentioned the 210. I play a church gig out the 210 every Sunday morning. And today they were just like, hey, as a precaution, we're turning everyone in the band into an employee. because they're so scared of the implications of AB5 and how they're directly threatening to come after churches because it's nebulous. It's like churches can kind of get away with a lot because they're nonprofit organizations and like
a lot of examples.
The money in and out isn't always transparent. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the closest I got. Like, I just did this TV show and it was all done through the union. We find out that the union has a collective bargaining agreement. So, like, they're like, hey, don't even worry about AB5. I was like, oh, of course, because you guys lobbied for it. Like, oops, of course, this isn't concerning to you.
And yeah.
Like, I'm trying not to misspeak because I know it's still very confusing and not a lot of people understand it. Mm-hmm. But it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. But we really won't know. Like, they could choose to really crack down on creatives, and it could be as worse than what everyone thinks it's going to be, or they could not. Mm-hmm. And it's not meant for creatives. It's not meant for the entertainment industry. So theoretically, they shouldn't be enforcing it too strictly. But
yeah,
I know that from what I read, it would definitely affect people like bartenders people in the catering business.
From what I understood, nurses. Someone explained it really well in an article. It was just on Medium. It was just like, you're supposed to, you know, if you're a restaurant and like your main business is preparing and serving food, like you're not going to have to put the band in the corner on a W-4. Like that's not your main business. They are still freelance contractors. That is not the issue. Mm. So, like, as far as I understand, that the bill's intent is not to be like, yeah, cool. If you're a bartender, like, you should be salaried at the restaurant that's using you,
right?
4 days a week.
Yeah, no, I know that. I know I misspoke when I said bartender, but I meant catering business people in the catering business.
Pretty much any freelancer is like it's. I think it's supposed to. I think it had good intentions, but it's creating a lot of chaos because I don't even know the number, but I think a strong part of California's economy is freelancers, just independent contractors.
Yes, yeah. that's also what I read. And the thing, the reason why I think I'm mainly leaning and mentioning about catering is because I did read a comment someone posted on Instagram that he works in the catering business and it's already affected him.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so he says he needs about three different jobs to make ends meet because, you know, the high cost of living in LA, and it's already affected him and he's already like looking for something else. And
right.
So
everyone's overreacting. Everyone's trying to be like, all the employers are like, I don't want to get in trouble when tax time comes or like by the government because I don't know. Everyone's preparing for the worst. Mm-hmm. And so they're putting people on the payroll, which means they have to pay more on the behind the scenes. They have to like pay extra taxes.
Right.
So people, like, in order to offset that, their jobs are going to be lost. It's like, it might be better for a handful of people, but is it? Like, then you don't have the freedom. You're now an employee. Like, a lot of the things that you get into being freelance disappear, like, which is like flexibility of schedule. If I want to like disappear for a month to go hike in the mountains, like, you can do that as a freelancer.
Yeah.
And like, the work may or may not be there when you get back, but that, you know, that you understand that you can talk to your clients, you can talk to your band leaders and just make sure that stuff is there and they know you're leaving. But like, now it's like, oh, do I have to like request vacation time? Like, you can't come and go as you please. Like,
we're pretty much safe as musicians and doing our art freelancing, in a sense. We're safe. It's just mainly
hopefully.
For Uber, hopefully.
I would, I mean, that's like, I mean, man,
we all think early.
It's still early. Yeah.
There's
okay,
be an
I get
exemption
it.
Here. I would be shocked if they didn't fold under the pressure and pass an exemption within the next month or two.
Got it, yeah.
Well
I hope
definitely
not.
Keep.
Yes. Yeah, I know, not going tuned, seriously. Well, you've received your BA in music performance at the William Patterson University. Is that accurate in New Jersey?
I finished two associate degrees at Mesa Community College in Arizona, which is like the big feeding school for Arizona State. And then I got a full ride to go to William Patterson, which is essentially
scholarship.
Yeah. So they paid for everything. It's 20 miles west of Manhattan in New Jersey. It's a public school, so it's insanely cheap. I had like little to no student loans to go there. Because I just had to cover room and board. But what's funny is people just don't know about this school, and it was founded by Thad Jones. It's one of the most prestigious jazz schools in the world. It's right by Manhattan. It's just on the Jersey side. But it's the same faculty as, like, New School, Manhattan School, the New York University. Like, all those adjunct faculty teach at all the schools. So kids are spending $80,000-$100,000 to go to NYU. Like, I'm getting the almost the same education across the river for a tenth of the cost.
Wow.
So it was kind of amazing. And I got there and it was an amazing culture. Like, all these like now famous drummers had just graduated. Tyshawn Sorey, Mark Juliana, Josh Dion. There's like just like a really wonderful community that I caught the tail end of, which was awesome because a lot That's of those cool. folks became friends and mentors and influences in my creative and personal lives.
Yeah, that was the next follow-up question. Like, are there any instructors or that credit, you know, that you credit for your achievements and that helped you become the man you are today, in a sense, you know?
Funny enough, I mean, like, really, like, it was probably the Mesa Community College
yeah?
time. It was, like, a drummer named Dom Moyo and a trumpet player named Fred Forney. Those were probably the two my two biggest mentors.
Fred Forney.
Fred Forney, yeah. Okay.
Fred Forney. Shout out to Fred Forney.
Yeah, he's an incredible musician and businessman. Very, very smart. Nice. Dom was like a master educator and like jack of all trades, could play any style. And they were just the guys in Phoenix. There's another drummer named Todd Chuba in Phoenix. It was just like he was very, very deep on the Jim Keltner school and just understood like recording at a whole a completely different level.
Yeah.
So being exposed to those guys was really wonderful. And they all encouraged me to go east like while I was young. Like, Phoenix isn't going anywhere. Go to LA or go to New York. And so I applied to a bunch of schools and William Patterson made the best offer. So I went to William Patterson and I actually had saved a bunch of money. So I spent most of my time going to the city every night. Like I wasn't really there to like study as much as I was to network and just long experience. So I feel like my peers were probably more influential on my time at William Patterson than the faculty. Although the faculty was wonderful.
Yeah.
I was like I spent 3 years in community college, so I had already kind of had a college experience. So it wasn't like this, like, oh my gosh, like I'm on my own kind of vibe. It's like, oh, I kind of had an agenda. I wanted to go and see all the clubs. It's kind of funny because I got there in 2004, 2005, a club called Rockwood Music Hall opened in the Lower East Side, which is right around the corner from the living room. The living room was where like Nora Jones and Richard Julian and Jesse Harris all cut their teeth. Rockwood was kind of like this new, small singer-songwriter hall, 80-cap music room. And that became my stomping ground. Like, I played there the year it opened. I don't remember how many months after it opened, but it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And they're celebrating their 15-year anniversary this month. So I'm going to get maybe it's February 2005. I'm still trying to remember my first gig there, but I've been playing there for 15 years, and it created this whole other scene of musicians in parallel with the living room. People like Ingrid Michaelson, Rachel Platten, A Great Big World. Man, there's just so many. Those are probably the most notable off the top of my head.
Yeah.
People had serious commercial success, but just so many wonderful people, musicians came out of this scene that have migrated all over the United States, and like I now have this like incredible network of friends and colleagues. So if I go on tour, if I'm just passing through on vacation, like I can always there's almost always someone in that town that I met or played with in my New York / Rockwood days, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. Go ahead.
No, it just sounds like a great environment to be around.
Oh, it was magical.
Yeah.
You've been a director of A&R for BMG, Publishing and Licensing, Fieldhouse Music in New York. I did a little digging, but I just wanted to make sure like it wasn't false of what I'm searching for. Like
I wrote my bio, so that's definitely true.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I know. So back to the Katie Couric show, like a mutual friend of mine who's a mutual friend of mine. A friend of mine is a singer-songwriter in Columbus, Ohio. Okay. And he was signed to a small sync and licensing / incubator imprint under BMG in New York City. And so the owner of that imprint, his name is John Leffler, and he was like the guy behind the Pokemon soundtrack, and he worked at Gray's
ad
agency for a long time. And so he created this like imprint, and he was the only imprint in the actual BMG on the BMG floor in New York City.
Oh, okay.
So he was like right in the middle of the BMG New York City offices. And so he's friends with Katie, and he pitched her the idea of having a band. And so the idea was like he wanted to feature artists signed to the Fieldhouse imprint on the Katie Couric show. And so the first artist he wanted to feature was my friend Jared Mahone. So Jared was like, I'm totally down, but I can't afford to bring my band out from Columbus. He's like, I think you should hire like a stable of New York musicians that can back up the singer-songwriters that you're bringing in, or the artists that you're bringing in from all over the country.
Yeah.
It'll be way cheaper for everybody. And then the band will kind of be a stable, a staple on the show. And he's like, that's a great idea. Like, I don't know any young musicians. So Jared's like, I got the guy. And he called me. He's like, dude, like, come meet John. And I met John. He's like, yep. Yeah. Like, great. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And like, I put together like a deck of like the musicians I wanted to call, headshots and credentials. And we did that. And then, you know, like I said, Katie decided she didn't want to do a third season. So she submitted her resignation, and all the producers immediately started looking for new work and cut all new business. And so I went to John's office and I was like, hey, I really liked working with you. I'd love to learn more about what you do. I don't really know much about publishing or sync and licensing. And I brought him like a bottle of whiskey and a stack of CDs. And he's like, I checked out your roster and I think you could use some more artists at a higher level. And so I dropped a stack of CDs on his desk. And then the next day he called me. He's like, come into the office. And he's like, who are these artists? Who are you? Like, how do you know these people? Like, they're not signed. I was like, no one's signed. They're all self-published. Like, these are all my friends. Like, they make amazing music and nobody's paying attention. And this was the Rockwood scene. And then that he's like, yeah, why don't you come in tomorrow? And then I just kept coming in and essentially working. I usually say it's like a unpaid A&R, but it was kind of like an internship. It was, you know, I say I got like a master's degree in music business by just going in, and he let me like come in and like tag along the meetings and
that's really cool.
Just kind of like show me the ropes and let me kind of do what I wanted, which is cool because I was still supporting myself as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So I was paying my bills in New York City just playing sessions and gigs and stuff. So
yeah,
I had, by not being an employee, I had the flexibility to do whatever. So I did that probably for about 2 or 3 years before I hit like the wall in New York that everyone hits at some point. Just like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm tired. I'm broke. I'm working so many hours.
Yeah.
And, like, it's awesome, but it's like, I don't know that I can do another like wedding gig or bar gig. I mean, some of the bar gigs, it would be like 7 to 10, 10 to 1, and 1 to 4 were the slots. And sometimes you could do all three.
Yeah.
And it's like, 9 hours of covers in bars. And it's like, this is
that's a long
exhausting.
Time. Yeah. Oh,
boy. And then like a few days a week. So like, you're doing this just to try to stack cash.
But nail it every, you know, because you've played so many times, you got those covers down like the original artist.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Dude, dance. I don't need to hear Sweet Caroline.
Right.
Ever again. But I know every version.
That is cool. Well, now you are the house drummer for the new ABC show. Is it okay to
talk about it?
Coming out this spring called Listen to Your Heart.
Yeah. So this.
How did you land that gig?
So, I mean, let me do like the connection from New York to
LA.
I hit the wall in New York. I started seeing my now wife. She's a New Yorker, but had moved to LA already. And she's like, I'm never going back. So you're going to have to come out here. So I was like, I feel like I have nothing left to do or prove in New York. So I packed up, moved out here, actually not too far from the studio, Valley Village.
Oh, yeah.
And took a job. I had a friend who was like, if you're ever looking for a real job, call me. So I got to LA. He's like, here's that phone call. He's like, cool. He had a joint venture with a booking agency called Martial Arts, which is a company based out in London. And they have like a handful of clients, the main client being Paul McCartney.
Oh,
so they
okay.
do all the promotions and booking for Paul. And so they were opening an LA office. So they brought me in. Like, I was under the impression it was supposed to be like an A&R gig, but it was kind of like office management and maybe some slight A&R. But I did that for about 18 months. The office gig definitely wasn't for me. I was like, I definitely felt stifled as a creative. And
yeah.
I really thrive in flexibility and being able to just say yes, 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 and no 2 days being the same. It was really hard to sit at a desk from 9 to 5 and not really have any creative input or do anything. Mm-hmm. So 2000 and fall of 2017, I started managing. I was like, well, I definitely don't want to get back into playing full time. A bunch of my friends had been asking me to manage them, so I just started saying yes to see what happened. And
yeah,
that just like took off. Like I just started reading books and going and listening to podcasts, and I'd been around the industry long enough to like know stuff. And I, you know, being around BMG and Fieldhouse for a while, I had a beginner's understanding to publishing and sync and licensing. And I can say now, like, I think a lot of people that I was working with, they didn't understand it. Like, yes, people at BMG didn't understand publishing. That is a problem in the music industry.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a common problem in the music industry. So I started just like learning and asking questions. And then I partnered up with a gentleman named Caleb Shreve, who had his own company called Killphonic. And we started working together. And then we agreed to like merge our rosters and just form like one singular management company under the Killphonic brand.
Okay.
And so, so we have like 10 clients and 10 artists under a roster. And so we're moving and shaking every day. No 2 days are the same. I get married to my now wife.
Congrats.
She's a singer-songwriter. Thanks. Yeah. She's had a long life and would probably take another 2 hours. But she was like a signed artist when she was a teenager. She retired, moved to L.A., rebranded, started playing, like doing stuff again. Got into sync and licensing and writing for sync and licensing. And she does like a lot of like vocal work for hire stuff. And through that, she met these like trio of music producers named District 78, who are these like wonderful, multi-talented music producers, but they're a team. They have like, a studio in Atwater, and they do all these things together. And they work on all these TV shows, including Dancing with the Stars, So You Think You Can Dance. And they were hiring my wife to sing on all this stuff. And then they like, I think they started needing drums or percussion or something. And they're like, doesn't your husband play? Like, I think we saw him at one of your gigs. Like, send us his number. So they started hiring me to do stuff. And I think the first thing we did was I played most of the drums on the first season of The Masked Singer. Like,
oh,
all those
wow.
were like, they had to re-record all the songs. They could
oh,
clear the
really?
Publishing, but they needed like 90-second cutdowns, and no one wanted to pay for the masters. So we recorded all these things, and they specialize at recording and doing stuff to choreography and time slots and working with contestants who are not necessarily super well-trained musically.
Mm.
And so they do have this like wonderful reputation as being wonderful to work with, lots of experience, really nice guys. So they got called to do this new show. So The Bachelor decided they wanted to do a music show. They wanted to, I think it was pitched as like A Star Is Born meets The Bachelor. And everyone's like, I don't know what that means. That sounds crazy. And so they
what is that?
Yeah, they reached out, I think, through this same production company that does some other shows that District 78 works on, and they asked him to take on the show. And then I'm like super blessing. The first person they called was me, and they're like,
yeah,
hey, can you help us like put together a band? Can you help us kind of like navigate some of this other stuff and play drums? And it's like, sure, this sounds fun. It was all like, the whole thing was shot in 3 weeks. It's crazy. Like, I've never watched an episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or anything in Bachelor Nation. I didn't know Bachelor Nation was a hashtag. Like, I just didn't
know. Oh, my gosh.
My wife was on The Voice. I work with a lot of reality show contestants, The Voice, Idol, like all those Songland. Like, that's all territory we're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I went into the union with the guys to start talking about what this show would look like. And it was just funny because, like, no one knew what the show was going to look like, but no one at the union had ever heard of a show like this. It's like, oh, it's like a reoccurring show. It's like, no, it's a series. It's like it'll be a season,
mm-hmm.
but we're not in like. It's just, there's no like one location. Like, you go to the Kimmel set. It's like,
oh, right.
The
yeah.
set moves
mm-hmm.
depending
oh,
on
wow.
like the location, like where they're wherever like the contestants are that day, like the band just like shows up and. there's like all these caveats that we had to like figure out. It's like, oh yeah, like no one's really done anything like this on major network, so there was no precedent to like hammer out the deal mm-hmm. for the musicians. And The Bachelor's never done a music show, so that, you know, they're so focused on the reality side and they're so good at it. So my District 78 was trying to hammer out the music side, and it's just like, it was just so many details, and I think it's going to be good. Yeah. Going in as a cynic.
Well, you're going to be the drummer, so of course it's going to be good.
But I don't know what's going to be on TV. Like, I can say that the contestants were wonderful. The production company was incredible. Like,
yeah. Awesome.
They treated us so well, and like, none of us were expecting that. I can't say enough nice things. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. We trust that everything will be as it will on TV.
Yeah.
Like, I have no idea like how much the band will or won't be in the show. Mm-hmm. We're in the first promo, which was a surprise, which is, I think, that's how good. Patrick.
Yeah,
heard about the show. I posted it on social media, and they, we wrapped short like not too long ago, and then none of us were expecting like a promo to air during
The
Bachelor.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, they're so good at what they do. They like they're a machine. So like they go from one show to the next. So.
Yeah.
I think it has a chance to be cool. They're not like the Bachelor contestants. These are real kids, singer songwriters. I keep saying kids, like they're all younger than me.
Yeah.
But they're real people. Like, I can attest to that. And like by the end we were like empathizing with them and rooting for them, and we were fully sucked in, and like I think it'll be very compelling. And like everyone can actually sing, is like real, like it's as real as reality TV gets. Whereas like, you know, if you learn about like The Voice and American Idol, they're not as real as they make it look these days.
Mm-hmm.
This was real, man. There were no second takes. Like, this was, I was
impressed,
super impressed, and totally taken aback. Like, this is not what I was expecting. This is cool.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. Again.
Yeah. No, we're keep our fingers
don't
crossed.
Don't hold it against me if it becomes more of a Bachelor Nation type show and less of a music show.
That's okay. No.
Well, running short on time, but wanted to see we can play a game.
Sure.
Let's see. Let's do our KKK game.
Chameleon kazoo karaoke.
It's not racist at all.
It's chameleon.
He was sweating for a minute. He's like, wait a minute here.
I didn't sign up for this.
Okay. All right. Well.
Let's go ahead and do one.
Yeah, we got time for like one. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. I talked
too
much.
Not a problem. Okay, so I have a kazoo.
Ooh.
And I basically play a song, and you have to guess it.
Exactly. I love
this. With the kazoo.
I love this.
And I don't have my things here, but we'll just clap if you get it right.
Fair enough.
All right.
Here we go.
You've
worked with this artist.
I told you not to do that one.
Ah.
Are you doing the chorus?
Yeah.
I told you not to do the chorus.
No. I'm working for the artist.
Do the other one.
Well, you can hear it. Ryan Cabrera.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. All the way down?
Yeah. Ryan's a homie. He lives local, and like we've been friends for a long time. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's his biggest song, and He's
great.
He's awesome. Like, he's still romping around. Coincidentally, he's friends with my wife and myself before Jess and I got married and knew that we were both friends with Ryan. And he's the man. I love that.
Yeah.
We did a tour. It was like Tyler Hilton, Teddy Geiger, and Ryan Cabrera. So that's where I met Ryan. It was on that Super Bill about 7 or 8 years ago.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely. And it's unfortunate we're out of time.
Yeah.
But thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
And follow Ryan.
Yeah, you can check out socials at Ryan Drummer Boy.
Uh-huh.
Management is Kalphonic, KALLPHONIC.com. And one of these days, I'll get around to actually updating RyanVaughn.com. Maybe with this show, I should actually do that.
Not there a problem. Well, thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you all for listening to the Strange Chameleon Show. And remember, if you don't know how to play the cajon, jam on!
Have a strange night. Have strange right. dreams.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.